From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. It's been a while since I've had my next guest on the program. Jossie Mansour is the managing editor of the Diario paper in Aruba. Welcome back, Jossie.
Thank you, Uzi.
Nice to have you again. Paulus van der Sloot has passed on. We're hearing lots in the news about it. Some are saying this is the best thing that could happen for the investigation. Some are saying just some downright nasty things about Paulus van der Sloot, whether he deserves them or not. I'll just leave that alone right now, but I'm curious your thoughts on the death of Paulus van der Sloot.
Well, it was sudden. It was unexpected, of course. I think that will have an influence on the further development of the case. Nothing has been done on the case so far in the past few months that I know of, and many months that I know of. I think that since we have a new government now, a new minister of justice, very strict, very a man that goes by the book, I think that the orders will be given to look into the case again and move forward now and see if we can find the solution and solve the case once and for all.
It's an interesting point. We've heard so much, although not so much lately, about Joran van der Sloot, but the many different stories that he's come up with, the many different arrests. Paulus van der Sloot himself was arrested for some time, or at one time, and the reports and the rumors that he carried so much influence when it came to this investigation that it was stalled, it was set aside because of Paulus's influence. Do you think there's any credence to that? How much power did Paulus van der Sloot have?
I don't think he had that much power, but I know that he had a lot of friends in the Ministry of Justice, in the prosecution department. I think that he did play a very important role. I know for one that he was allowed to sit in on many of the interrogations of Joran. I know that he was given the privilege of looking over the declarations on when the transcripts were done, that he made corrections in his own handwriting. I know that he did play a very important role in the whole case, and especially in the interrogations where privileges were given that weren't given before in any other case that I know of.
If you're just tuning in, Jossie Mansour is here. He's the managing editor of Diario. After Paulus passed away, Jossie, there was a lot of questions about Joran and his attendance to the funeral. We've seen some reports in the media about it, but tell us what you know about Paulus's funeral.
What I know is that he was not buried in Aruba. His remains were taken to Holland. They were cremated. All the family went away, and they haven't come back yet to Aruba. I heard lately that Joran was living in Holland, not in Thailand, that he probably assisted, in other words, was present at the cremation ceremony. And we have absolutely no idea what's going to happen from here on out. I know for a fact that no participations were given by the family of the death of Joran, of Paul van der Sloot, in any newspaper here in Aruba. It was just the only participation that we received was from the Order of Lawyers, I mean, from the Association of Lawyers here. Mm-hmm. From the family, nada.
Nothing. Okay. One last question, Jossie. The search for Natalie. We haven't heard much lately since Tim Miller and the Persistence crew were there searching the ocean quite some time ago, and I'll be interviewing Tim Miller a little bit later on, where he reminds us all about the 140-some targets that they still need to search for. Can you recall, or do your sources remind you at all of the search for Natalie, in particular a trap that some remains were found in? We have reports the DNA was tested. It did come back to Mayo, but there's been so much misinformation in this case, we're not sure. Can you tell us anything about the search for Natalie?
I'm not aware of any searches that went on and quite a few months here in Aruba. I know there was the intention on the part of his of her father, Dave, to come again with some dogs and search a pond that we call Montserrat, the pond of Montserrat, where this witness that was later given a lie detector test and came out very well, that he said, remember, that he saw Joran walk by his house, all covered in mud,
right,
one shoe on, and that later on, a car passed by with him and his father in the car. And no, I think that the intention is to search that pond again very thoroughly. But I'm not aware of any other kind of searches that have taken place here in Aruba in the past year, at least.
With the new Minister of Justice, has there been any comment, and I know it's early since Paulus has passed away, about reopening, or I guess I shouldn't say reopening, this case has always been open, as far as further investigation into this case?
No, he hasn't made any remarks to that effect, because they've only been in office for about 100 days now, and we always give them 100 days to settle down, put themselves up to date with everything that's going on. It was left by the other very poor government that we had before this one. But I know him very well personally, and I'm sure that he will activate the case as soon as he's ready to do so. I'm positive about that.
Well, that's good news, because certainly the Holloway family deserves some answers. Jossie, it's always nice to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. And that's Jossie Manser, the managing editor of Diario. My name's Dana Pritzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a quick break and be back with some breaking news with Blink from Blink on Crime, our sister blog here at Scared Monkeys. We'll be right back.
The Dana Pritzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio will be right back.
Jessica.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Megan there?
Sure. Follow me. The kids are in the kitchen making sandwiches.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Jessica.
Hey, hi, Megan. Hey, Megan.
Yeah?
You're a total freak. God, you're ugly. And dumb. Oh, and your makeup makes you look like a tramp.
Oh, my God.
Tommy Morris told me you guys made out. Everybody knows. The whole school knows. He said your breath smelled like garbage, and he almost puked. He says you're the most desperate girl he knows. And that dress is totally hideous. You look like a big fat clown. Disgusting. Oh, and by the way, nice zit.
If you wouldn't say it in person, why say it online? Delete cyberbullying. Don't write it, don't forward it. For more information, visit ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Joe's Landscaping. This is Joe.
Oh, hey, Joe. I'd like an estimate to install a sprinkler system in the forest.
Okay, your property's on forest land?
Oh, no. It is the forest.
I don't follow.
Well, I'm calling around for estimates to install sprinklers throughout our forests.
What?
Well, let me explain. We're a grassroots group looking for funding to combat people's recklessness with fire in the forest. We can't get funding if we don't have an estimate, so, you know.
Are you serious?
Yeah. We're calling it the National Sprinkler System. Isn't that great?
You want to know how much a sprinkler system would run you for the forest?
Uh-huh.
That doesn't even make sense, sir.
Oh, no. Oh, you know what? You're right. Maybe we should just map out Olympic National Forest first.
Is this a joke?
No. Imagine being able to flip a switch and put a fire out.
Flip a switch. You know how much land you're talking about?
I know. It seems big, Joe.
It ain't seems big.
Well, they built that pipeline thing. That's pretty big.
No. I'm sorry. I can't help.
Wait, Joe.
Only you can prevent wildfires. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, the Ad Council, and this station.
Okay, we're back. I do have some breaking news. It doesn't happen often right while we're doing the show, but we do have breaking news with Blink from Blink on Crime regarding the Christine Shetty case. Blink, you're with me, I hope.
I am.
Hey.
How are you, Dana?
I'm fine. I know it's been busy for you. It's a case we've talked about. Of course, go to blinkoncrime.com or check us out at scaredmonkeys.com. We do have breaking news. Although sad news, it is good news, I guess, when it comes to the investigation part. It's always good to have this. Tell us what's going on.
It is, Dana. First, I want to say it's unofficial. But my sources are telling me that are inside the investigation that the remains recovered yesterday in the area of, there's a bed and breakfast there in Snow Hill, Maryland called the Riverside Inn, are that of Christine Marie Shetty.
Okay. Well, this is a case that, you know, we have talked about. It's been a little while. Refresh my audience's memory, please.
Sure, sure. Christine Shetty was a guest or of some what she thought were friends in a farmhouse on Bird Road.
Yeah.
And was last seen and heard from on the evening of November 12th, 2007. Although there had been what I'll call peripheral witness accounts and speculations, it was not until through the dogged pursuit of Christine's mom, Lynn Dodenhoff, she had come to me and said, could you do a piece? And, I mean, legitimately provided access, which I could not believe. She had maintained notes, emails, fax data, things she had investigated herself. And we, through that work and through the pieces on Blink on Crime, were quite certain that the last time that Christine had been seen was at a party the night of November 12th at the Bird Road Farm. Prior to that, there had been several fires that occurred, mm-hmm. some requiring as many as three different volunteer fire department responders. So a significant, you know, three-alarm blaze, if you will, that seemed to never have really been investigated. There were no classifications on those fires as if they were accidental or arson of any kind. It's our position that possibly had that occurred and an arrest made in those fires, Christine would be here today.
Yeah, and it is so sad because you've done such good work covering this case, and when we look at all the pieces and putting it together, just sitting back and reading the investigative reporting that you've done, you're right, it is difficult. This is breaking news regarding the disappearance of Christine Shetty. Tell us, what's the... and I know it hasn't been confirmed yet, but let's talk about the location from where she lived to where she was located.
Well, where she lived, it's significant. It's about 2 hours away, but where she was staying, mm-hmm. it's about 11 miles.
Okay.
So it's certainly, it's also on sort of the river bank there, if you will. She was not on the bank, so it was not a situation where she washed ashore. She was actually buried. That's about as much as I can say.
Okay.
Regarding her recovery at this point. But one of the things that I, in this case, that has been so riveting, and we've talked about it briefly, I think we talked about it in the year-end show, is Christine's mom and her and dad and her family have just waged an absolute onslaught to resurrect her case and to be heard and to bring her to the forefront, because the investigation into her disappearance, in my opinion and based on the facts of the case, was really not taken very seriously by this local jurisdiction. And to further add to that, and you know, Dana, I'm a staunch law enforcement supporter, as you know.
Yep.
In this instance, the work that needed to be done was not done. 2 years after the fact, meaning October, November this year, excuse me, in 2009, some witnesses had just been interviewed for the first time.
Yeah.
And what happened was, through Lynn's, again, I'll call it dogged pursuit, after the original lead detective in the case was allowed to resign with his pension, after he was investigated by the state's attorney's office, Joel Todd's office, she went to... where she needed to go to say, listen, this, I don't believe my daughter's case is being taken seriously. What are you going to do? And the case was taken from Worcester County Investigative Bureau and given to the Maryland State Police. Dana, I kid you not, between the efforts of Joel Todd's office and the Maryland State Police received this case on Monday, the 15th of February.
Mm-hmm.
We had a recovery of what we believe to be Christine Shetty yesterday.
Yeah. 4 days.
And, exactly.
Yeah.
That is nothing short of a mother's vehemence and, honestly, there were days when we covered this case and I would speak to her and I thought, geez, you know, maybe this isn't the right work for me. I just don't have the thick skin. And she would say, hey, you know what, Blink? Chin up.
Yeah.
Get moving.
Yeah.
I couldn't say enough kind and, you know, inspirational words about her and her family in recovering.
Isn't it amazing, and you and I have talked about it before, is the strength that the victims' families have, and in particular this case. Has there been, and I know it's preliminary, but has there been any reaction from the family?
I'm going to withhold comment. I have spoken with the family,
okay. But
out of their, you know, out of respect for their privacy and
Absolutely. What
we've been asked to keep a lid on, if you will, from out of respect again for the work of the Maryland State Police and the State's Attorney's Office, I will just say that I think it's fair to say she and her family are highly appreciative of all the efforts that everyone has put forward on her daughter's behalf, and you know, they await the official classification, if you will.
Sure. Yeah. No, I understand and totally respect that. As far as the investigation goes, 4 days, we have a preliminary recovery. What's next, or have you heard as far as the investigation?
I have, Dana, and that's an excellent question. There's Joel Todd was quoted as saying there's a much larger investigation, that the tip that led police to what we believe Christine's remains was part of that. And we've uncovered and covered some very peculiar goings-on in terms of the some of the government in this Pocomoke City. And it's my understanding that the ATF, through a meeting that I advised and took place, is also investigating the fire issue.
Mm-hmm.
Although they don't confirm that. That's their policy, similar to the FBI.
Sure.
And also some ancillary government issues that are being looked into. I when I had heard that, I was surprised at the swiftness of the state's attorney's office to retract the case from the local jurisdiction. And they would have, Maryland State Police, had they not had a full caseload, had taken it a bit earlier. I mean, they literally just got this case. So, again, kudos to the state's attorney's office and the special investigator there, who I don't know if I can release his name, so I won't.
Sure.
They did such fine legwork when they took over this case and then turned it over to Maryland State Police. So it really is, you know, a success in working together rapidly and with great respect for Christine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what needs to be done and hasn't been done. Quite apparently is respect for the family, and let's get the investigation going. They've had a real good start, and you know, and I know, Blank, that there's probably a lot more that we're not hearing about right yet, and we should hear about in the next few days. Great job reporting this, and tell the folks how they can find out more about you and your blog.
Thank you, Dana. I do appreciate that. We're blinkoncrime.com, our true crime site, where we do profile quite a bit of missing persons cases. In this case, this was a very cold case with no, and I mean no, resources available. We researched this case through witnesses, through the family, through people that were there, and that's really the only way to do it. And I just want to impart on behalf of the Sheddies and the Dodenhoff families, they never gave up hope. They fought to find their loved one, and they fought to get answers. And I just want that to be an inspiration to families who are, as we know, so common, are missing their loved one and not getting answers. Don't give up.
No. No, that's for sure. And, you know, and don't give up the good work that you've been doing on your end either, Blink. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you so much, Dana. Be well.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Blink from Blink on Crime, and make sure and check out her webpage, her blog page. It's a sister blog to Scared Monkeys. Just click on the link in the show notes or just go to blinkoncrime.com. They do great work over there, and our condolences to the family. Although it is great news to be able to recover your lost one, but it's sad to see that she will no longer be here. However, she's in a much better place than the person that took her life. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about another family who's had a missing loved one for quite some time. Of course, the Holloway family. Most recently in the news, we've heard about the main suspect, Joran Vandersloot's father, Paulus Vandersloot, passing away. We just talked about that with Jossie Mansour from Diario. We're going to bring on Tim Miller from Texas Equus Research to talk about his thoughts on the death of Paulus Vandersloot, and I'll share some of mine with you. This is a Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. I'm not sure if you're a fan of Cesar Millan and The Dog Whisperer. I am. I'm a huge animal lover, and I love that show. And if you know that show, you'll know Cesar's favorite dog, the Rottweiler Daddy. I'm just seeing in the news here that Daddy has passed away. And that's certainly sad for Cesar Millan and his family, and for dog lovers out there, because Cesar Millan certainly proved that just because it's a pit bull doesn't mean it isn't the gentlest dog on earth. And I'm very certain from watching that broadcast that Daddy Millan was. So sad news from the world of the dog whisperer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I have Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch here. It's always great to have Tim on. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Dana. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Nice to have you back on the show. Listen, I know you're busy. A big gala event tonight. Let's start with that. What's going on?
Well, you know what? This is a family that we actually searched for their daughter back in 2001. And they've been seeing all the things that we've been doing and everything, and contacted us, I don't know, 7-8 months ago, and said that they wanted to put on a gala for us, and it appears as though it's going to be, you know, bigger than I anticipated. And again, you know, it shows that, you know, how much these families really do appreciate what we do. I'd say most families appreciate what we do.
Yeah, for sure.
As long as we don't go to Florida.
Yeah, we won't get into that right now, that's for sure.
That's right.
Listen, nobody knows the Holloway case better than you. Paulus Vandersloot has passed on. Your thoughts?
My thoughts is, you know, God bless him for number one, and certainly his wife and his you know, two younger children. But Dana, I truly don't believe that's the worst thing in the world that's happened on Natalie's case. You know, my thoughts are, and you know, I think a lot of people share these thoughts with me, is that, of course, something happened with Joran Vandersloot and Natalie Holloway. Unfortunately, she is not alive anymore, and I'm just positive that nobody's going to change my mind. And I feel as though Paulus Vandersloot had something to do and let's go ahead and help him dispose of Natalie's body. And I think he took a lot of stuff to his grave with him. And you know, from the very beginning, after I got involved in this case, it was pretty obvious to me that this cover-up was not about Natalie. I think the only reason Joran Vandersloot hasn't been prosecuted on this, that if Joran went down, I think that Paulus would have went down. I think that the island feared Paulus. I think that, you know, there was a lot of corruption going on over there, money laundering going on. And if Paulus Vandersloot would have went down, I think that he would have blown the whistle on other people on the island, and several people would have went down for the, again, the corruption that was going on the island at that time. And so my thoughts are now is that nobody has to fear Paulus.
Yeah.
And I anticipate that there is a possibility that some people may come forward now. So, again, we don't want anybody to die.
No.
But I believe in this case that, you know, it's very, very possible some new things will develop. And, you know, I always said that Natalie's case will never be over with until it is over with. And I believe that, you know, that this could take us to a new direction. And we always have to hold on to that hope for one day it's going to be over with. And one of our members actually experienced that. Finally, after 23 years, we got his sister positively identified. So, you know, again, we got to hold on to that hope and hope some new things develop. I know that, you know, John Civetti, I was talking to him, Civetti and Lou Schaefer, of course, are the ones that we went down with 2 years ago to do the deep water search. And and John's actually wanting to go back over there because we got 140 plus targets out there in the water.
Right.
To and take the ROV over there and go ahead and investigate some of these targets that are down there. And you know, of course, the whole thing that stopped that. We went there for 3 weeks, ended up there 2.5 months, and it was Lewis Schaefer put out about $1.7 million on that search. And you know, the reason we couldn't continue was, of course, you know, lack of funds.
Yeah.
But so Betty's going to go over there and do some more things, and again, we just hope and pray that some people come forward now, and they don't have to fear Paulus VanderSloot, and you know, Beth and Dave can somehow someday get some closure, and hopefully be able to, you know, have that funeral that Natalie so much deserves, and her family certainly does.
I agree totally, Tim. Listen, I won't keep you. I appreciate your comments, and good luck with the gala tonight.
All right. Thanks so much, Dana.
Take care, bud. Okay, bye-bye. That's Tim Miller, Texas Equisearch. And, you know, he says it best. You never want anybody to die. You know, that includes Paulus VanderSloot. And you throw all the flack at me that you want, okay? Did Paulus VanderSloot take secrets with him to the grave? Absolutely. Will this help? Now, will there be some people that don't fear him anymore? I really hope Tim Miller is right. It's amazing to me that one man like Paulus VanderSloot may have the power to control some of those that maybe he was able to control when it came to this investigation. I'm not sure. I think it's more of a total corruption when it comes to the investigation, right from the top to the bottom. Justice Department, Police Department, corruption, ineptness, call it what you want. And maybe Paulus VanderSloot did have some pull. I don't know. We'll never know. But now maybe that he has passed on, some people may come forward, and that's all we can hope, is that Dave and Beth will get that closure they deserve. I'm Dana Pretzer. That's that's my interview with Tim Miller. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
We'll be back with more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Okay, we're back. It's always a pleasure to have Dr. Dale Archer on the program. Of course, you'll know him as a psychiatrist, a contributor to many television news broadcasts, cable news broadcasts. He has his own show, the Dr. Dale Archer Show. And check out his webpage at drdalearcher.com. Welcome back, Doc.
Good to be here.
Nice to have you. Listen, we got lots to talk about tonight, and I'm dubbing this segment "What Are They Thinking?" And many people, and I thought, why not bring a psychiatrist on to talk about that? Many people, when they see these stories that we're going to talk about, we'll sit back, and the first words out of their mouth are, wonder what they were thinking. And I want to start with a topic I know you've talked about, and of course we've covered lots on the program here, is the disappearance of the Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway. Now, it's been in the news, although not as much as I thought it would be, that the main suspect in the case, Joran VanderSloot's father, passed away from a heart attack here last week. And there's been a lot of public reaction, both along the lines of, you know, good. it's about time that this family suffered like the Holloway family has suffered. Some are saying that Paulus VanderSloot took some secrets to the grave with him. Some are saying that, you know, it's kind of a redemption thing. Oh, the Holloways have lost their daughter. Well, it's about time that the VanderSloots lost someone in their family. I guess my question to you is what are people thinking? What's the line here? Is this normal?
Well, I think that it's normal with respect to the fact that anything that makes the news is going to invite public comment. And the yep. bigger the story, i.e. Natalie Holloway, the more people are going to talk. And, of course, in a crime story, everyone thinks they know who did it. Everyone thinks that they can weigh in, they can be detectives, they can make a pass judgment on the case. And, you know, I think that this is just it's people talking because it's high profile. They hadn't heard anything about it in a long time. This comes up, and they're going, oh, yeah, well, you know, his son was guilty, and he knew about it, so good. I'm glad that happened to him.
Yeah.
Obviously, logically, that it plays no role whatsoever if you think about it. I personally believe that there should have been a trial, and that could have solved a lot of problems here, because if Joran had been put on trial and found innocent, then I think that at least a lot of the speculation that somehow the Aruban authorities are colluding here, trying to keep this from justice from occurring, would have been laid to rest. So that's my big issue on the case. Yeah. Put him on trial. If he's found innocent, then fine. He's innocent. But obviously that hadn't happened.
Well, I agree. You know, we can sit back and speculate, and, you know, the Holloway family, and I've interviewed all of them, has suffered a great loss. The Vandersloot family, I'm sure, are the only ones right now that can answer the questions, but until they're in front of a court, they're not going to say anything, unfortunately. And the death of the father, take it either way. I've even taken some flack because I've criticized those that have made fun of the death of Paulus Vandersloot. Like, Paulus Vandersloot, I'm sure, did take secrets with him to the grave, but unfortunately we have no way of talking to him and asking him what those secrets are right now. And only the Aruban government and only those in power that could take this case to trial can answer that. But let's get into another big story, Dr. Archer. I watched it. I thought it was, you know, if I was to give an Academy Award for apologies, this next individual wouldn't get one. I thought it was very rehearsed, very, I think some of the terms they were using on TV was robotic. Tiger Woods and his apology, your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. I think that it would be foolish for anyone out there to think that a celebrity of that nature is not going to have a scripted response to anything that he would be going to talking about on the media, other than after he just won a golf tournament, perhaps. So I think that for something of this magnitude, any one of us would sit down, we would write it out, we'd think about it, we'd correct it, we'd rewrite it, we'd redo it over and over and over again, and we'd go, okay, that's what I want to say, that's perfect. And I think that someone of his stature is going to have a writer that would be working with him to do that. So that's number one. Number two, you got to think, how hard would that be for any of us, any person in the world, to get before the national media, international media, and to talk about the things that we had done that had obviously affected our wife so tremendously, our kids, our life, our career, every aspect of what we do and who we are, to get before a public tribunal just about and to talk about that. And I think that with all that being considered, I personally thought Tiger did pretty well. I mean, I think he owned up to his errors. He admitted it was on him. He admitted it was no one else's fault. He begged FIBA to leave his wife and kids alone. He said he wasn't ready to return to golf yet. He said that he didn't know when he would be, that he was going back to therapy, that he was working very hard on this. So at the end of the day, I think the fact that he is still not ready to return to golf, which obviously he loves, which obviously he's one of the best players in the world, if not the best ever, and he's putting all of that on hold in order to address this, to me, that says it all.
Yeah, you know, and you make some good points. Dr. Dale Archer's here. We're talking about Tiger Woods. And he's going to take more flack. In fact, there's already cartoons coming out today with him standing at the podium and a well-endowed woman hiding underneath the podium while he's making his apology. There's no winning for Tiger. There's no...
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, no, I think the New York Post or New York Times or something. And there's no winning for the guy. I guess I just... Maybe I've been doing what I've been doing too long, and I read into his presentation too much. And you're right. Everyone's different. They're not all going to be good actors. And sometimes the good actors are the phony the phoniest people, right, rather than the person that gets up and reads from a script. But my last question in regards to Tiger Woods is the public's reaction. You know, we had all three major news networks breaking into programming. We had it covered all over the place. You name it. It was like the president was speaking. In fact, I've got to wonder if maybe more watched that than when the president does speak. Here's a guy, a golfer, whether you love golf or you don't love golf, who the media is turning into this story, this huge story about a guy who admits his infidelities, who has family problems, no doubt. But is it as big a story as the media made it yesterday?
Well, I think, again, the problem with the media now is there's so much competition in terms of networks and broadcasts that, and you have 24-hour news channels, and I digress a little on this because I'm really, really passionate about this, on why these stories become so huge. When, if you think about it, 30 or 40 years ago, this A never would have broken, most likely, and B, if it had,
that's true,
it would have received maybe a 2-minute segment on the NBC Nightly News, and that would have been it.
Yep.
Of course, with 24/7 news coverage now, anything like this that comes along that has the potential to be big news is going to be shot live, have endless commentary about it, because you got 24 hours of news you got to fill up. So this is fantastic fodder for those people. So I think that on that note, yes, I can understand it being this big. And then there are a couple of other things that go into it. You know, perhaps the greatest athlete alive right now, showing that he is infinitely failable, and
yeah,
talking about that, manning up, if you will, to the fact that he made a mistake. So I think there's a fascination there from a hero, fallen hero, type of tragedy, and then now we're looking at the apology, and then hopefully the resurrection will start. So I think that it just makes classic theater in every sense of the word, and that explains why it's so huge, in addition to the the media networks hyping it beyond all possible belief.
Yeah, and you're right. And it's just, I found it amazing, especially some of the news coverage of Katie Couric, and they're cutting in and going to this poor guy standing up and saying how much of a cheater and a dirty dog he's been here in the last little while. And I'm sure the late night comedians, when they get back to their talk shows on Monday night, will have lots to talk about too. Dr. Dale Archer is here. You know what? And let's compare Tiger Woods to Letterman. And although not as big a stature, I think, either one of them, but I found David Letterman's apology to be very honest. I give him a lot of credit for coming forward and admitting to what he did, and I guess I should be doing the same thing for Tiger Woods.
Did you, just out of curiosity, did you personally feel that Tiger's apology was not sincere?
Yeah, you know, and again, I'm sitting here, tapping my fingers and wondering, after I've spoken to you, and that's why I bring you on the program to straighten me out a little bit here.
I don't know what a good job I do about that.
When I first watched it, I thought, this is about as phony as a $3 bill. But now, when you sit back and think about it, because I'm watching the facial features, I'm watching the body language. Maybe I've been watching that on the body language experts too much on TV, and how he wasn't, he was talking with his head down a lot, and he wasn't making good eye contact, I thought, and he kind of stumbled through his words. But then when you come back to it, the sincerity, I guess, is all in the presentation sometimes, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not sincere. I'm going to change my mind on this and say, yeah, he was sincere, and this is far from over. He's got a lot to live up to next. Where Letterman is a professional comic whose job it is to get in front of people, and that's why I brought him up, and to talk to people, and he even made fun of himself a little bit, and there was the difference, where I thought Letterman was more sincere. But now when you think about it, he spent the last 30 years talking to people, making fun of himself. So let's get off these two guys and let them take cold showers. And
I got, Let me just throw in one last comment.
Sure, sure.
I thought that the person that did the best in terms of a ashamed celebrity, and this was a different arena, but was Michael Vick.
Yeah.
I thought Michael Vick, when he did his apology, basically it was an interview-type setting, so it was not scripted. He had no notes. He was being interviewed.
Yep.
And he basically just stood up and good eye contact, said everything right, you just got the feeling that, wow, this guy really gets it. And, of course, since then has gone on to walk the walk and be praised by the SPCA and PETA and the Humane Society for all the good work that he's done. So I would give him an A+. I'd probably give Tiger a B.
Yep, that's right. I agree with you. In fact, I forgot about him. So one dog fighter and two dirty dogs, a dog fighter comes out on top. Anyway.
That's why you get the big bucks, Danny. You come up with those.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, let's go to a serious situation now. The university professor, Amy Bishop, and again, we sit back and think, what is she thinking? We're seeing and hearing lots about her past, the death of her brother, a confrontation in a pancake house, and this tragedy. And we have to wonder... first of all, we can do several lines here, and we could probably do a whole hour show just on that story, is the screening of the university types, her being able to have firearms, all this sort of stuff. But it's really hard to read people sometimes. Yeah, you can have a jerk out there that gives you a hard time in a pancake house. That doesn't mean he's going to go to work the next day and shoot all his colleagues.
Well, I think that the indictment there really doesn't need to lie with the university system per se, because if you remember, with the 86 shooting of her brother and then the 93 pipe bomb incident, she wasn't charged in either one.
I forgot about
that. So there was no police record for them to be able to point to and say, hey, this woman potentially has a problem, because she was charged and then, never sentenced or never convicted or whatever, but to never be charged, there's not going to be a record of it. And if you think about it, what an indictment of our system to think that you can forget to pay a $100 bill to Target and it'll be on your credit report forever, even if you finally make restitution on it, whereas you can kill someone and never even get charged, have no record anywhere for anyone to find out about it. So I think, to me, in terms of the screening, that's the big, huge red flag there. Obviously, I've got a lot of thoughts about her her mental state and everything that led up to what happened, and I think that it's really not well understood out there what led her to do what she did. But, sometimes it's an event like this when you're trying to put a personality profile together of an individual, and you've got a piece here, you've got a piece there, and you're building your puzzle, and then finally you've got the key piece that comes along, and you look at all the other behavior in her life, and you go, okay, now I understand it. Everything is very clear now. And I think for her, this is really what allows us to do that, unfortunately, in retrospect.
Yeah, you're right. And in these cases, it's always after the fact, and it's after the lives have been lost. But, sticking with her, we're hearing a little bit about her husband, and he's coming forward saying, well, he didn't think that day was any different of a day, and he's had contact with her since she's been in jail, and she's calling him to make sure that the kids have done the homework. And you got to wonder, first of all, with her, what she's thinking. I guess to sit back and analyze a little bit, that every day now is just a normal day, and what happened, and she's going to continue on with life. And that sort of mentality, I guess, is prevalent with those who lose it, for lack of a better term.
Well, I got in a little bit of a heated discussion with Jane Velez Mitchell on her show about this a couple of days ago. But, a person like this is a narcissist of the highest degree. So they're a pathologic narcissist.
Yep.
And we talk so much in mental health about all the problems that arise from low self-esteem. This is an example of high self-esteem, the highest self-esteem. And what happens with someone at this level of narcissism is, A, they only think of themselves. Everything revolves around them. They think they're the best, the greatest, the brightest, and they deserve the best. And in a case like that, being denied tenure, which, of course, in the academic world is paramount to being fired for incompetence, because if you do your job and you're a good professor and you stay long enough, you get tenure, which keeps you from being fired, and then you can work the rest of your life on whatever you want to work on in the university system. So she was denied this. That was a psychic blow to her of epic proportions. You basically have someone who thinks how great they are in every aspect, and they're the greatest worker and they deserve the best, and then all of a sudden you say, no, you're not, because you're not getting tenure. That is a huge insult to her. And at that point in the pathologic narcissist's mind, and to give you an example of this level of narcissism, this would be a Bernie Madoff type of situation, only with the propensity for violence. So to her, this insult was more than she could bear, and it was necessary at that point to start looking around and saying, why did this happen? Whose fault is this? Because it can't be my fault. Well, it must be my colleague's fault, because they're jealous of me, because they know I'm better than they are. They're trying to hold me back. It's their fault, and I'm going to show them. I'm going to take this into my own hands, and I'm going to do something about it. So it all revolves around the individual. It all revolves around them. They don't care about anyone else. They don't think about anyone else, which allows her to basically, after it's over, it really hadn't affected her. So she's saying, yeah, how are the kids?
Yeah.
Because this, on her psychological scale, is just a blip.
Yeah.
This is no big deal to her, because she was acting in order to defuse this plot of her, these people against her, and murder just happened to be the route that she chose.
Yeah, that was the thing for the day. Andrew Stack, the Looney Tune that flew his airplane into an IRS building. You know, we've heard a lot about him and his rambling. They called it the manifesto. I hate that term, but whatever. I want to ask a little different question about that, Dr. Archer. We heard a little bit, and I wish we would have heard more about the way that these sorts of tragedies, when they happen, of course, with 9/11, we heard of, you know, lots of heroic stories. I covered them here on my program. And even on this one, it brings the best out in people. I think he was a glass worker who pulled up his truck alongside the building, threw up his ladder, helped people out of the building. The news media covered him for about 18 seconds and then continued on talking about this nut, Andrew Stack. What brings out the best in people in situations like this?
Well, I think that this would be the exact opposite of the narcissistic personality that we were talking about. And we talk about continuums in psychiatry and mental health. And the continuums basically cover a lot of different areas, perhaps whether you're talking about being obsessive compulsive to one extreme over to sloppy at the other extreme. Well, one of the continuum scales that I've actually looked at and analyzed is the narcissism scale, which goes from narcissism at one end to altruism at the other end. And you have different individuals by genetics that are going to fall along this scale, but of course our own upbringing and our personal values and everything that we are and believe falls into our development of where we're going to eventually tip that scale. And I think that the people that put others ahead of themselves all the time are the ones who are very likely to, when given a situation, become what we call heroes, because their thoughts for others are more overpowering than their thoughts for themselves. A narcissist only thinks of himself. An altruist only thinks of others. Obviously, at either end of that spectrum, it's a problem, but those that tend more to the altruistic scale, it's just like the narcissist doesn't think anything about stealing millions from people because he didn't care about their feelings. That person is feeling the pain of the individual in a burning building or in a tragic situation, and they think nothing of themselves, and they immediately go to help. So, you know, there's actually a genetic component to this, which is never talked about in the media, but I think it's very important in terms of understanding who and what we all are.
And you know what? You're right. And that's why we don't hear these stories, and that's why, you know, what's the old saying is that, you don't look after number one. You're too busy looking after everyone else. But thank God for people like that that do go into the building, burning buildings, whether they're firemen or whether they're civilians in this case. But when you have an Andrew Stack who, you know, tries to burn his house down with his wife and daughter in it and then crash his airplane into a big building, again, I guess this is my last question for the day. When we see how the media covered it, and of course the first thought is terrorism because of a plane flying into a building, yet you have someone like Andrew Stack, it just makes you wonder how many Andrew Stacks are out there right now, mad at the IRS or mad at their plumber or mad at Dr. Dale Archer because he's given him bad advice on something.
Well, you know, I'm going to take this a little different direction because I think that this is very, very emblematic of a problem in America today, which is just now starting to get a little bit of attention, and that's the fact that unemployment is still right at 10%.
Yeah,
the American people are hurting, and you know, I'm saying American. We could really generalize and say the world.
Yeah.
But I think that they're hurting and they feel that big government is still spending. Wall Street is still raking in record bonuses. The execs and the CEOs are still flying around in their private jets. And the little guy is left to bear the burden.
Mm-hmm.
And they blame all kinds of things for that, from the government to the military-industrial complex to Wall Street, but they think they're all linked. They think at this point there's actually a rumbling out there of a conspiracy theory that these folks are all tied in together. They don't care about the little guy. All they care about is making record profits, keeping the government going, keeping spending going, and the little guy is left to pay the price. And I think in this case, as we learn more about it, I'm going to predict that we're going to uncover a lot of information that, you know, he was disgruntled and upset, and he was targeting the IRS for that very reason. And I think that more and more you're reading about the little guy starting to say, we're getting screwed. We're getting screwed, and no one cares. It's business as usual for everyone else. Meanwhile, one out of ten of us don't have a job and are really, really suffering. So I think that we got to be aware of that, because in someone with the slightest bit of a mental illness, they can take that anger and they can take that pain and suffering and turn it on a target, i.e. in this case the IRS. And if we're not careful, we're going to get more of this going forward. I think we really need to come out and address the issue and say, this is what's going on, let's fix the problem.
Yeah, well said. Dr. Dale Archer, thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Dale Archer. Check out his webpage, drdalearcher.com, and you'll see him on many of the cable news shows and, of course, his own television show, The Dr. Dale Archer Show. Yeah, when we're talking about Tiger Woods or the Andrew Stack, he's right. How many Andrew Stacks are out there, Amy Bishops, and, you know, the Holloway situation? What would the best way to bring this all forward would have been is trial, and I guess the Aruban government and the powers to be, the justice system there, has failed. Will it come forward and still bring justice to this case? Yeah, I think so. But the death of Paulus van der Sloot, does that bring justice to the Holloway family? Oh, I'm not anyone to represent their feelings because I can't. I don't think it does. Did he take secrets with him to the grave? Absolutely he did, no doubt. I still say making fun and making light of his death is not something that we should do. You can do it, sure, feel free to do it. That's your choice, but it's also my choice to say there are better ways of handling this. The way people die is not going to bring making fun of it and laughing at it and doing whatever you think is not going to bring Natalie Holloway back. I wished it would. Will Joran van der Sloot have a conscience and be able to say, now I've lost my dad, maybe I should come forward and tell the truth? No, I don't think so. I think he's one of the big-time narcissists that's out there, like Dr. Archer talked about, and I don't know if anything will ever make him come out with the truth. And right now, I believe he's the only person that has the truth. His mom, maybe, I'm not sure, but certainly Joran. And does he know how to tell the truth? Well, he's certainly demonstrated that he doesn't know how to do that. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And we are right back, and I want to cut right into my next guest. Her email signature says, legal commentator, victim advocate, that's true, former prosecutor. She has a new book, It Happens Every Day Inside the World of a Sex Crimes DA, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Criminal Justice System, Child Molesters and Predators, a Sex Crimes DA Answer. Say that three times real fast. 100 of Parents' Most Asked Questions. I screwed that up totally. But anyway, you know her as Robin Sachs. What you don't know, I'm told, is that she may be playing Tiger Woods' mistress number 7 in the upcoming TV movie, but we're in negotiations about that. Hi, Robin.
Okay, that is not happening. I assure you.
You know, I stole Dale Archer from you as a guest, and that's okay. I'm proud to admit that. And he and I did this interview this morning at 7 o'clock. Believe it or not, he was half asleep, and so was I. But once we started talking about Tiger Woods and some other things, you know, Bishop and Stack and the guy that, you know, the guy that flew the plane into the building and all that, we just kept going and going and going and analyzing, and a 15-minute interview became a 25-minute interview. But I wonder, when it comes to, you know, like Tiger Woods, and you being a person that's been in the courtroom for as long as you've been, and someone who can, and I use the term read someone, when I first watched Tiger Woods, and until I talked to Dale Archer, I thought, what a phony SOB this guy is. He's just out here doing this because he's being made to do this by his sponsor or whoever. But Dale Archer had a little different take on it. I'm curious about yours.
Oh, I wish I had the Cliff Note versions to see what Dale said first. Then I could, of course, you know, do what any good commentator does and not inform my opinion completely around his and steal all of his material. But no, on a serious note, I watched the apology, and I was annoyed that I didn't have a passionate feeling one way or another, because usually I'm one of those people that quickly forms an opinion and can size someone up. I'll tell you, my first thought was, okay, it was good. You know, it's amongst the better apologies in the celebrity apology arena. So far, still, my favorite celebrity apology has been David Letterman.
Yeah.
And that, even though people, you know, thought that he was making a joke and doing it on the show, what I liked was how quick in time he did it from when the incident blew up. And so for here, with this kind of, you know, six-week setup period of time, you kind of expect it to be wowed out of your mind. And I didn't get that wow feeling, and I didn't really, you know, the whole Buddhist thing really didn't do much for me, but I also did feel that he stood up for his family and his kids and his wife particularly. So, and I just feel kind of lukewarm, milquetoast about it. You know, I don't feel particularly jazzed by it. I don't feel particularly bothered by it.
I'm wondering why any of us really cared much about it. I'm a bit of a golfing fan, and yeah, he's done a lot, but really, in my day-to-day conversations throughout the year, Tiger Woods' name hardly ever came up. But it was interesting to see how all the networks cut in with breaking news. And I use the analogy that probably more people watched his little dopey press conference than they do when the president comes out and talks. Your thoughts?
That's true. And you know what I actually realized? I was thinking about this yesterday, too, was that, do you realize that the president is on TV every single day of the week? I thought that was kind of just an interesting thought to think about. Talk about someone who has, you know, gives the public a piece of them all the time. It certainly is the president. But, no, I did. I mean, the problem with this is exactly what you say, is this is a, you know, a non-story story in many ways. I mean, it really deals with an affair, a personal matter, blah, 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 blah. But the fact is that why is it that the news media breaks their regular coverage for this? Because our society has said that we are fascinated and obsessed with salacious details of people's private lives. We like watching train wrecks. We like to see who's going to be the next train wreck. you know, we've talked about it hundreds of times before. It's, you know, our society is obsessed with Jersey Shore and then, you know, John and Kate or Kate plus eight by herself, whoever it is. I mean, those are the stories that sell, and we sit here and, you know, whine and complain about it, but yet that's what our society has decided is important to them. So it's not the news media's fault, it's our fault.
Yeah, you know what? That is probably the truest thing spoken in quite some time. Robin Sachs is here. Check out her webpage at robinsachs.com. Listen to her on the radio, on Blog Talk Radio, Sunday nights, by going to justiceinterrupted.com. There are a few other things I want to take your mind and get your comments on a little bit here. First of all, the university professor goes nuts, shoots some of her colleagues because she doesn't get tenure. And then Looney Tune that flies his airplane into the building, it just seems like disaster news. The crazies are still roaming around out there, Robin, and we still have a story to talk about every day.
We do. We do. As a matter of fact, it's sometimes unbelievable how we always have a story to talk about, and what's unbelievable is how many stories are not spoken about.
Yeah.
And why is it that now, when the university professor you know, have to injure, you know, six or eight students and cause so much damage, do we finally then go, oh, wait, she killed her brother, you know, some 15 years ago. Oh, wait, there was an incident in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And why are we looking at all of these things in retrospect and making a story of it now when the story should have been 15 years ago?
Yep, and it continues on with what you've written about many times on your blog and in other places, the missed opportunity situation.
That's exactly right. And there's nothing that is more maddening to me than knowing that the signs and symptoms are there. I mean, and frankly, we see this all, you know, all the time, where we hear about cases and no one does anything, and we say to ourselves, okay, we'll see that when that, you know, after the person's killed a couple more people or hurt some more people or raped some more people or have done this, or maybe something will be done about it when this happens or when that happens. And how much bloodshed do you have before people pay attention? And why, you know, in a time and day where we're seeing so much obsession with salacious details and Tiger Woods stories, why isn't it that we're spending time looking at these other stories?
Yep. No, you're right. Robin Sachs is here. You and I have talked about Natalie Holloway and her case now for years. It's been fairly quiet as far as the media goes. A lot of blogs like Scared Monkeys and some others have stayed on top of the story, and we all hope for the best for the Holloway family, that they will finally get the answers that they, you know, truly deserve. Most recently, Paulus van der Sloot died of a heart attack. I believe probably took quite a few answers to this whole story to the grave with him. I've taken some flack because I have criticized some of those who made fun of his death. I don't think it's right to make fun of anyone dying. But I do agree totally that this van der Sloot character, the dad, Paulus, has had a lot of knowledge and went with it to wherever he went, with either upstairs or downstairs. I'll let you decide, that are out there listening, which side of the earth he's on. But when it comes to this case, Robin, and the death of the dad, who himself was arrested, who himself had a whole bunch of influence into how this case went, how does this death now steer this case? Is it a non-event, or will we, in your opinion, see some changes? Maybe some people will come forward now, like Tim Miller said, because they're not scared of Paulus van der Sloot anymore.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, it's, you know, just exactly what you said. I mean, there seems to be one of two routes that this can go. Either you're going to see people coming forward, you're going to see your end maybe you know, be under the watchful eye of Papa over there, who's going to watch out for him and be there to cover his hiney should he say or do something out of line.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, with the number of secrets, the number of probably key pieces of evidence, and again, perhaps the ultimate answers in this case, depending on how you look at it, that could be also gone with him. But I don't think we're going to see resolution to this case in any way that's going to, and I don't see resolution to this case just as a result of his death.
Right.
There would have to have been something that would then start a trail or a path that would then allow for an investigation to start in an area and confirm and get pieces of information. I don't think the death in and of itself, Mr. Van der Sloot, is going to do enough to change the facts, even if it's just about getting someone to come forward. I mean, if someone comes forward, that's one thing, but then the person coming forward would have to then lead someone to, or investigators, to evidence, and then that evidence would have to corroborate whatever the version of what that person said, because there's too many stories out there, too many things that have been botched, too much control and too much effort he had made during his lifetime, that I think that, you know, the hope for a nice, clean, okay, now we've moved him out of the way type of investigation, I just don't see happening.
So who needs court TV nowadays when you have the Justice Interrupted radio show on Sunday nights? What's coming up tomorrow?
Well, we try to fill the void and take all the people who were once employed by court TV and see if we can bribe them to come on to Justice Interrupted, and that's exactly what we have.
Yep.
One of court TV's longtime hostesses, Lisa Bloom, will be joining us, and she is joining us, as you may have seen her little debacle with Gary Coleman, which, you know, made everyone worry, are we going to be dealing with an Nancy Grace CNN lawsuit where someone's going to actually harm themselves? Is Gary Coleman going to harm themselves?
Yeah.
Is there going to be a lawsuit against Lisa Bloom and so forth? So for all those interesting issues that came as a result of her interview with, or the team interview on the Insider, she's going to discuss with us, and maybe we'll get her to weigh in on some of these other cases as well. And then we have Russell Wenson, who's known as Mr. Pop Squire. He's a lawyer. He's a celebrity analyst, and he will be weighing in on Tiger Woods and some of the other, pop culture stories that have everyone saying ooh and ah. And then, of course, Stacey and I are going to banter and discuss some of the cases that don't get coverage on regular channels and give updates on the Cherish Lewis case that we've covered as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for sure. I know I will be tuned in, and again, go to justiceinterrupted.com to find out how to listen. And as far as Gary Coleman goes, I wouldn't worry about him too much if there was ever a has-been. But it was interesting to see his body language, boy, I tell you, when you looked at his face and that vein popping out in the front of his head. Lisa was very brave to even be sitting within 3 feet of that character, because he looked like he was going to snap. And
she was hitting some nerves there.
Yeah,
I was uncomfortable watching it.
Well, boy, what
TiVo days later.
What a telltale sign for sure. Robin, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
See you next week. Bye bye. That's Robin Sachs with our Nothing But the Sachs segment. Now, I haven't done this for a long time, and I'll stay on the air for the next 5 minutes or so and give you an opportunity to call in and voice your opinion, in particular about the death of Paulus van der Sloot. If you want to get after me for some of the comments I've made, fine, I'm going to give you that opportunity. And if you want to just state your case, feel free to go ahead. Now, it's not toll-free. We haven't had the toll-free number for a while, but you can certainly call and voice your opinion. I won't keep you on air very long at area code 306-842-0775. That's 306-842-0775. You can call in and make a quick comment regarding the death of Paulus van der Sloot, how it will or will not affect the investigation. And just to remind those that are listening on the podcast, and many, many, many of you do, the call-in number is only for when we are on live. So during the live show hours, which if you're listening to the recording, obviously isn't. Call in 306-842-0775. I'll stay on for a couple more minutes and we'll see if there's any interest in that. A lot of the time there isn't. That's not the type of show that we do here or we have done in many years. But I want to give you the opportunity because it has been tense, to say the least, in the last week or two. I've made some comments and others have made comments that aren't usual for the group, the listenership that we have here. Of course, I have detractors and those that just
plain and simple, don't like anything that I do, that's fine. And I always give those that want to have the opportunity to speak their mind a chance to speak their mind. Yeah, email is fine and the forum is fine, but if you actually want to come on air and do it, you can. And I'll give you that opportunity pop on the air real quick and say what you think. Again, 306-842-0775. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Dana. I just wanted to ask you, mm-hmm. when you're talking about making fun of the death of Paulus Vandersloot, mm-hmm. what exactly do you mean?
And you know, that is, and you make a good point. That's a pretty broad statement that I'm saying. Some of the cartoons, some of the Photoshop pictures, some of the comments, and when I say making fun, I don't necessarily mean sitting back going, ha, 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 ha. I mean just, you know, how much he was sweating when he died. Maybe, and you know what? Believe me, I have beat myself up over what I have said time and time again, and maybe I'm just getting too soft in my old age, but hey, listen, this guy was, you know, he was a loser. I agree. He took he took a lot of knowledge with him to the grave. He covered up for his son. He got the government to cover up for him, whatever, we may never know. But I just don't find it suitable, and I'll say that much, to see some of the comments that we've made. And listen, a lot of people made nasty comments, gut-wrenching comments about Natalie Holloway, too, and those same people are out here now praising Paulus Vandersloot, and if that isn't hypocritical, I don't know what is.
Right. So what you're not saying is we don't have to like him now that he's dead, right?
You cut out on me. Repeat that, please.
I'm sorry. So what you're not saying is now we have to like him now that he's dead.
No.
Talking about specific...
No.
Specifically, the heart attack event.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Things that preceded that or after that.
Oh, no, 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 no. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you have to like him because he's dead.
Okay.
I just know, and that's far from the truth, and I still don't like the guy either. I just have a... I don't know. Maybe it's because some people have said, because I've had some tragedy in my family lately, that I'm reacting a little differently. I don't know. I just found fault with some of it, and maybe I'm totally wrong. And again, everyone has the right to say what they want. And but no, liking him now, that's probably the biggest mistake anyone could do.
Right. I just wanted to clarify exactly what it was
you
were saying.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I'll stay here. You let me know. Area code 306-842-0775. No, I'm not saying you have to like the guy. You like, yeah, and if you do, great. You know, I think it was Tim Miller said tonight, God bless him and his family. You can't find a nicer guy out there than Tim Miller. And he would probably take some criticism for that. But he also said the death of Paulus Vandersloot may be the best thing, and I hope he's right, that happens to this case. That maybe now people who were afraid of him before will come forward now and give information that may finally bring justice to this case. You know, I'm to the point right now, I have to see it to believe it. I think Joran Vandersloot confessed when he was on video and driving along in that vehicle. He confessed very plainly. I think the witness, German, who took the polygraph and passed, and we talked about that here on the show 2 years ago with Tim Miller, was the most honest witness around, and that said a lot. It's just the goofy government and those in power there that decided not to use it. Is Jossie Mansour right now that they knew have a new justice minister and it will come forward and something will happen? I hope he is. Hi, you're on the air.
Good evening, Dana.
Hi.
This is Anna in Alabama, and I wanted to say that I think the comments about Paulus that are not very complimentary are directed more at his supporters and family
mm-hmm.
than Paulus, because he can't hear us now. And we had just today Anita Vandersloot on Facebook making fun of Natalie.
Yeah.
Her freckle. So... it's hard not to return in kind.
Oh, yeah.
I wish we were big enough people to do that, but sometimes we're just not.
No, you're right. And how disgusting is that to make fun of to Natalie? And that's gone on for years now. But I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm, you know, I'm too soft here. But
well, you're a better man than I am because I'm just not strong enough to resist the temptation.
You know, I'm not sure if you heard. I'm not sure, Anna, if you heard the show tonight with Tim Miller, and I think the first words out of Tim Miller's mouth were, "God bless Paulus and his family and his children." And that, you know, Tim Miller is just a nice guy. But then the second words that he said were, you know, it's also probably the best thing that happened to this case, and I sure hope he's right, now that Paulus Vandersloot is dead, that his influence, negative influence to this case will be set aside and maybe they'll finally get some answers. But, you know, I don't know. And I'll apologize to you and anyone else that may have taken my comments out of context. I didn't mean to say that I'm putting Paulus Vandersloot on a pedestal because that's far from the truth. I would say that about anyone, you know, and I don't...
Right, respect for the dead. I understand that, and normally I do have that. But in this instance, I don't think it's really the deceased that I'm targeting so much as his supporters.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that somebody will have the courage to come forward now.
I hope so.
That Paulus is gone.
I sure hope you're right. Anyway, I won't keep you any longer. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. And we'll grab one more phone call, 306-842-0775. 306-842-0775. Call in and let me know what you think. You know, does the death of Paulus Vandersloot bring a new beginning or a new opening or a new opportunity for this case? You heard Jossie Mansour tonight saying that the new Minister of Justice, a friend of his, has said that he will take a new look at this case. I don't think the case was ever closed. Is that going to be true? We've had so much and I'm saying that like I'm directly involved because I'm not, but we have all seen and heard of so much, and I'll use the term false hope in this case, with the arrests and then the unarrests and then the rearrests and the charge and no charge and then this and that and the Kelpos and all this sort of stuff, and the charges were never filed. It's got to be one of the goofiest systems that I've ever seen in Aruba, but nevertheless, it's their system, and let's hope Jossie is right. Let's hope that this new justice minister or new government in power now will be able to come forward and finally do something that's right. But, you know, if there is any hope, and I still say that Joran Vandersloot confessed in that video with him driving along in the vehicle, smoking the marijuana. Marijuana aside, I'm sure that's probably the closest thing to the truth that actually did happen. And with the witnesses and the polygraph tests and all that, I'm not sure what more they need. Anyway, I'll give it another few seconds and see if there's another caller, 306-842-0775, and remind you that our webpage is at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, pick up podcasts of past shows, listen to my daily commentary, leave comments, and I certainly encourage you to do that. It only takes a second, and let me know what you think. That's the wonder of being able to do a show like this, and I've been doing one for a number of years now, is I can state my opinion, and you can state yours. Okay, this is the last call for the evening. Hi, caller, you're the last call.
Hey, hi, Dana, this is Bill B.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. On the subject of Paulus's death,
yes,
I do believe it's a shame for any human to lose their life, but it is normal.
Yep.
As far as it relates to the Natalie Holloway, oh,
well,
gosh, it's we're hoping that good things come out of this.
Well, I do,
people
too.
People that may have been afraid of Paulus's powers on the island may come forward.
Yeah.
But I really wonder if no one comes forward, maybe there is a higher level of cover-up that's going on there that would be disturbing.
Yep.
So
and you're
I
right.
Guess that's really.
You're right, and I appreciate your comments. And you know, we may never know. Although I really hope, especially for the family, not for me. I don't matter in this case. It's the family that matters, and they certainly deserve answers. Thank you for calling, sir.
Yep, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
All right, that's it. For those of you that wanted to call in, sorry you couldn't get through. We don't do that very often, but it's nice to hear from you. That's it. That's the show for tonight. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.